Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 144.
This week on the podcast, CPAC answers the question, is it possible that ISIS could be as evil as unions?
And Bibi Netanyahu considers us family, which is, we guess, better than being one of his numerous abused housekeepers.
The House GOP is playing coy at revealing its DHS funding strategy to its own members, hoping to surprise even itself next week.
And even before the ancient Barbara Mikulski's retirement announcement, Dianne Feinstein was the oldest woman in the Senate. Will she be our Strom Thurmond?
A supposedly more organized Clinton campaign is already so indecisive that it can't even agree on when it's going to start.
And Bill O'Reilly knows even less about his whereabouts than we previously gave him credit for.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
CPAC was this week, guys.
Yes!
And you know how much fun we had with the Iowa Freedom Summit?
Yeah.
Well, we're about to have it again.
Yes. Because
it was basically the same event.
Every time these people end up in the same room together, we're going to have a field
day. It's a joy. It's a joy to bring to you.
Yeah. Well, we talked last week about, like, all of the people who are running for Republican, you know, to be the Republican candidate, and it's all the people. Whenever there are conferences like this, they all show up and just try and out-crazy each other, and that is, again, what happened this last weekend at CPAC.
Unsurprisingly.
Mm-hmm.
Although, always a new frontrunner emerges with these people. It's never
That's
the
right.
same person.
No, can't decide.
The sort of presumed world frontrunner, Jeb Bush, is not a favorite of these guys.
Right.
So people were expecting him to have a tough time there. And he did, to some degree. I mean, people expected the crowds to get a little rowdy with him. They expected people to kind of, you know.
Right.
CPAC is a really rowdy audience.
Right.
These people do not fool around.
Right. And the reason that people were expecting Jeb Bush to have a problem with these type of people, and I want you to just...
Imagine this in your mind.
This is a thing that I feel like the country needs to get in their brains early. Because once you understand what I'm about to tell you, then I feel like we'll start to get someplace as a nation. Jeb Bush has to continually go and convince these lunatics that he is conservative enough for them to want to vote for.
Yeah.
Jeb Bush.
That's Jeb Bush we're talking about.
Jeb Bush we're talking about.
The third Bush. Bush the third.
All right? This is a man who has to go there and tell these people against walkouts during his speeches, which we'll get to in a second, that he is crazy enough for them. This man is a Bush.
Yeah.
He was a born crazy person.
He's genetically crazy enough for them.
If you are him and you have to go to this convention of mouth breathers and convince them that this is, don't elect any of them.
No.
Once he is in the party of the people who are having to do that,
right, this is,
you're out.
This is a bad mistake for everyone.
You can't, they're all equally unelectable once Jeb Bush is having to do this.
Yeah. And he, you know, he did get a little pushback. Like we said, there was a weird Rand Paul's supporters like had a walkout of his speech on Friday, which was hilarious, wearing Stand With Rand t-shirts. And then they had, like, it was like a very quiet walkout. Like they just sort of shuffled out and then they had like a rally in the hallway. But he basically, you know, surprised everyone in a, I guess, positive way by not being so terrible and uncharismatic that people were forced to hate him more. That was basically what was considered the great success of this event, was that he didn't walk out with, like, more haters than he walked in with, because he apparently had been practicing really hard at kind of figuring out how to frame himself as more conservative while not really saying anything in the process.
Yeah.
Because he isn't conservative enough for these people, which is so concerning.
Right, and this is from the man, by the way, who, it's interesting that he's trying,
everything
is interesting, and I was about to say something that I was going to immediately want to take back, but what I was about to say was that I feel bad for Jeb Bush, which is
you're
not-
You're always the one to point out that you feel bad for someone. You're always,
I know.
Feel bad for Hillary Clinton. Right. She's having to defend, it's so inconvenient that the Iraq war situation blew up just as she was talking about running for president the first time.
But,
like, you know.
But Jeb Bush probably has the best chance of becoming president of this whole, you know, clown car full
of
people.
Well, he's a part of the monarchy already.
And he is the person who sort of, you know, very eloquently said that you have to lose the primary to win the general. And he's right. And, you know, obviously, like I said, he's a nutbag. And he's too crazy to vote for. But, like, you know, The fact
what a
that
sad
he,
state.
What a sad state. For him.
For him.
I feel bad for
right.
him.
It's a really bad state for us. Very right. sad and bad exactly. and all of the words that rhyme with that for us. Yeah. He mm-hmm. called himself a practicing reform-minded conservative. Which
that doesn't mean anything.
Means nothing. Like,
doesn't mean
kind
anything.
Kind of fuckery is, like, once, if you're saying reform-minded conservative, you've just said a, you've just said an oxymoron. Like, there's, that's not even a thing that you can say.
Yeah.
And a practicing reform-minded conservative, what is a non-practicing reform-minded right? conservative
he wants
thing?
He wants to reform in the sense that he wants yeah. to go back to right. how it was. He doesn't want to reform forward.
No.
He wants to reform no. backward.
He's a back reformer.
That's right. Yeah.
Conserving things by back reforming. Meanwhile, the real hero of CPAC was Rand Paul.
Yeah.
Who got a hero's welcome and a hero's exit and a hero's cheer in the middle.
Yeah, he won the straw poll.
He won the straw poll. Walker, their second in command these days, got second.
Yeah.
But he, Rand Paul, and this is the, I think the third year in a row he's won the straw poll. He's just like walking around, because this is, these are his people.
Right.
Rand Paul is just like weirdly fringe and confusing enough that these people just like can't get enough of him.
Yeah.
Everyone else has to sort of play the regular politics game a little bit, so I think they yeah. can't really ever please these people. Rand Paul is so out of left field and talking so much random nonsense and like making so little sense as a person.
Right,
and
they love it.
They just love it. They yeah. love nonsense.
That's right. That's, they do.
And that's what they get with Rand Paul.
Yeah.
So he really gained a little momentum coming out of this.
Sure. It still surprises me, and I said this to you earlier, I just, him, you know, these are sort of like the most conservative people around.
Right.
And the fact that he is not wanting to, you know, bomb all of Earth
I know.
Is interesting to me that he still is able to win
Question,
all of these things.
Do they know that?
Well, I think they do.
I mean, but, I feel like he maybe goes into these CPAC events, because he's also a Tea Partier, essentially.
Yes,
he's like
he
a
is.
Libertarian Tea Partier.
Yeah,
so I feel like he goes into these events and he talks a bunch of Tea Party nonsense
yeah.
about the government being in our business, and all of those people are crazy and are worried about the government being too much in their business, and so
right.
they're like, ha-ha, we'll get the government out of our business.
I know.
And, like, foreign policy probably is not one of the talking points that he really, like, harps on at
right.
CPAC.
Well, yeah, you're right. And I think that he sort of, similarly to why I think Scott Walker is doing fairly well right now, is that he is sort of one of these, you know, straddlers of,
yeah.
you know, that can sort of speak enough sense about some things to sort of, like, sound reasonable to, like, some people, but then also, like, have the most insane wackadoo ideas to also, like, appeal to this crowd of people. Scott Walker has sort of, like, a similar effect. Like, he's, you know, the governor from a generally blue state and whatever,
right.
but he's also,
he's
like...
He's destroyed all the unions,
and he also
and he's not afraid of anything.
Dumber than a post.
Yeah.
And just, you know, he doesn't have a college degree, and he's
right.
a fucking moron. But,
yeah.
so he can appeal to the idiots and the, you know, just can, he can
and
appeal to
evil
everyone.
People. Evil people and, idiots
and idiots
all love Scott Walker.
Right, and Rand Paul has the same yeah. effect on people.
That's true. Well, and he also... I think there is sort of, like, especially with the Tea Party, there is this sort of, like, libertarian underpinning to a lot of what they believe. Because the Tea Party, I mean, we talked about this a lot when the podcast first started, about how the Tea Party really is ripe for some sort of, like, populist takeover.
Right.
The Tea Party is a bunch of disgruntled poor people who are, like, disgruntled because they're poor.
Right.
That it's poor white people.
Yeah.
They're disgruntled because they're racists, partially. But, I mean, it is a group of people that could have easily been co-opted by the left if we had been a little bit more organized and a little
right.
smarter about how we approach them.
Well, and this is why I think one of the whole themes of, like, our entire, you know, 2.5 years
right.
of podcasts is how...
Brent, we're about to hit three.
We're about to hit three. That's right.
That's how many years.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway.
But just that how similar those two groups
are.
That you really turn into, you know, if you come around far enough on the left, then you've accidentally, you know...
Found yourself on the right.
Found yourself in the Tea Party.
Right.
And vice
and
versa
you're, And if you're far
too.
Enough right, you might accidentally find that you're four single payer.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's... I feel like Rand Paul, because he has this sort of, like, libertarian streak, one of the things that I think at the very end of that spectrum when you're about to hit the left that you get is, like, crazy, freedom-loving, get-out-of-my-business government... thinking.
Right.
And that's something that he speaks to. So they, like, almost don't really care about the, like, details. Because
no.
they're sort of like, haha, keep the government off my land. And, like, can't be knowing anything, you know, sort of more specific than that.
Well, right. Well, and I think because of that, he, you know, he can almost sort of run, you know, almost like an Obama-style campaign. Whereas,
right.
you know, there's not necessarily much content there.
No, just
because
a lot
there
of
doesn't
hope.
Have to be, because it's, yeah, I mean, he's...
A lot of hope.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Hopes and dreams
mm-hmm.
of the far wackadoo right.
Yeah.
big loser at CPAC, or not really loser, but just continued loser in life because he's an asshole, is Chris Christie.
Yeah.
Who is sort of slowly, not slowly, quickly losing momentum to the degree that he got, like, first of all, no one wanted to go see him speak. Like, no one was at his, he's not conservative enough for these people anyway, but also, yeah. CPAC is not where you go to be an asshole in the way that he's an asshole. New Jersey is where you go to be an asshole that way.
Right, and that's where he's the governor, and he's really making a dirty, rotten go of it
exactly.
there.
Exactly. I mean... Exactly. But, like, we talk all the time about how, like, Iowan grandmothers are not going to appeal, are not going to find that appealing, and, like, the CPAC voters really aren't going to either. So, he's already kind of got an issue with those voters, but they also, like, Laura Ingraham was interviewing, was doing, like, panel discussions and interviewing people at CPAC, and so... She got this chance to sort of, like, cross-examine him, basically, and, like, was fairly cutting in the types of questions she asked. She asked about, you know, what he's going to do about the fact that he's not polling well at all. She asked him about, you know, what he's going to do about the fact that his temperament is famously sort of, like, uneven and that he screams at his constituents and things like that. Things that just reminded all those people that they didn't like him anyway.
Yeah.
Well, and Chris Christie's sinking ship, which Chris, we told you he
and
would
Chris
be.
Christie is a sinking ship because of the reasons that you just said. And I think another reason that, you know, we should, that Chris Christie is a sinking ship is that what doesn't get talked a lot about is that New Jersey isn't doing so great either.
No.
I mean, we can talk about
you
sort
can't,
of...
He's you can't, he's on like an austerity diet.
Right,
I mean,
can, yeah.
Multiple kinds. But I mean, right. they're on an austerity budget situation there, basically. I mean, they're like Greece.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is not a man who probably would necessarily win re-election right this very second. I mean,
no.
It's not going so great in New Jersey. This is not a man who would win that state.
There's no way to cut everything and have it go well a couple years in the future.
Right.
It seems like it's going swimmingly at the moment because of all the savings.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, I love a tax cut. But then when you realize that all of your services are gone... And your asshole governor is creating traffic jams
and
just to get back at political rivals, and you have nothing else going on. And if your television gets stolen in, you know, right out of your home, you're on a waiting list of 5 million people, you know, before it can even, but the police won't even show up because they don't have the manpower to investigate any of these things. Like, those are the realities of what's going on in New Jersey. Unless Cory Booker is personally shoveling shoveling your yard or saving your cat, you don't have much to live for there. So, So he's not, I don't think, a real contender, and never really has been, but I think he's people are starting to see that, because people have still been talking about him like he's a real person, and I've always felt that he was not a legit candidate.
He's not. I totally
Scott
agree.
Walker got a lot of the same treatment as Rand Paul, like with the crowds getting all excited and people cheering and whatever, but he had a few missteps.
He did.
One that was fairly well... I mean, he did this thing that he does where he just, like, punted on questions that he should answer.
Right.
Like, he was asked about net neutrality, and he said, I'm for freedom.
Yes.
Oh, we all are, Scott Walker.
We all are. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing that. Right. He was asked about minimum wage, did the same thing. That's, like, when he was asked about evolution a few weeks ago and, like, refused to answer the question. But he also had this really unfortunate talking point where he compared the union protester, or the people that had been protesting in his state capital that were trying to save the unions, the union member protesters, to combating ISIS.
Oh, boy.
He said, if I can take on 100,000 protesters, I can do the same across the world.
Yes.
Now, to be fair, as we learned from Jeb Bush's misspeak last week, there are only like 20,000 ISIS fighters, so maybe
true.
He can. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
But one thing that I think we can all agree... is that union protesters are not the same thing as ISIS.
They're not the same thing. No.
Maybe people at CPAC can't agree on that.
Right.
But that's what common sense people can agree on.
Yeah.
As you might imagine, people didn't take that so well.
They did not.
Union and non-union members alike were both
well,
like,
it's just so ridiculous. I mean, it's a...
This is... You've got to be careful. This is like calling someone a Nazi. You have to be careful when you decide to go full Nazi.
Right.
You know? There's like... There's ways to call people evil... without calling them Nazis, without saying that they murdered 6 million people.
Right.
And this is sort of like a similar type of thing where you've got to be careful when you are going to compare your own constituents and your own citizenry to a terrorist group.
Right,
you just got to be careful.
Yeah.
Scott Walker, not a man who's careful.
He's not. He's not a smart man.
He's not a smart man.
No.
He's the kind of man who, also not smart, the dogs that are barking randomly in our sound studio.
God. Who are these dogs anyway? Where do they come from? How do they get so close?
Just a bunch of ear-eating dogs that...
Yeah.
Brent's dogs are fond of just, like, chewing on each other's ears.
Yeah, they really are. It's annoying.
Now they're just running around the house, barking and probably ear-chewing.
Yeah, that's it.
In any case, Cruz, Jindal, also at CPAC, as you might not be surprised to find, they, because they're sort of like in desperation mode, went the attack the rivals route and basically just like talked about how they're more conservative than all their buddies that were also speaking there. Yeah. So that was a little unfortunate for them, probably. Also a little desperate, like Chris Christie.
Yeah. Also, two people who are not going to be president.
No. That's first of all, Ted Cruz can't be president because the man's Canadian.
Right.
Bobby Jindal is like an exorcist or something. So, like, he's got other issues to face.
Lots
also,
of them.
Louisiana's not doing that well. So, like...
Well, shocker.
I mean, surprise, surprise. But, like, these are not people that have a record to run on. Yeah. Ted Cruz just has the record of causing shutdowns, a thing that no one likes. But so, in any case, they are useless to us and also know that they're being useless because now they're just trying to step all over their rivals.
Right.
Surprise standout, though, at CPAC.
Mm-hmm.
Carly Fiorina.
Again. Like, well, she's got this one-liner that's perfect.
And she just keeps using it. She's using it everywhere.
She's not afraid to repeat it at all. It's genius.
Yeah.
And, I mean, whoever wrote it should be commended. She didn't, certainly.
No.
But, I mean...
Good work, speechwriter for Carly Fiorina. You've taken a woman who otherwise cannot present herself in front of a crowd and given her a one-liner that people love.
Right.
She has sort of positioned herself as, like, the anti-Clinton candidate.
Right.
Because she is not afraid to make the sort of reference that she is also a woman, so then they wouldn't, you know, then they've got that covered if she runs.
Right.
But also, she is sort of, like, most directly staked out her position against Clinton, even though they all talk about, you know, Clinton all the time. Like, she's the one who really has made this her, like, hallmark. Her line, in case you had forgotten it from last time,
let's
is...
Let's do it again.
Like Mrs. Clinton, I, too, have traveled the globe. Unlike Mrs. Clinton, I know that flying is an activity, not an accomplishment.
It just gets me every time.
Every time.
Yeah.
And then she said, Mrs. Clinton, name an accomplishment.
Yeah.
I would like her to name an accomplishment as well, though. It seems like a thing that neither of them are particularly adept at doing.
No.
But so in any case, she's sort of like someone to watch at these conservative events. She is not someone who's going to be the president.
No.
Because that's laughable. But she's somebody to watch as the primary field sort of filters out. Because I think that she will be sort of like in the kind of final grouping in the Michelle Bachmann type spot.
Yeah, I could see that.
You know?
Yeah.
Where she'll be like... What Republicans love tokenism. So they love to have one woman who's completely nonsensical. That they can be like, see, we love women too.
Yeah,
we're trying to actively curtail their rights, but we love them.
Yeah.
Because look at this woman. And I, at one point, noticed the one thing that I'm going to talk about again in this election cycle, but I notice every time, is that Republican and Democratic women have different haircuts.
Mm.
And she is, Carly Fiorina is straddling a line, because she has a Democratic haircut.
Interesting.
Because the Democratic contenders always have short hair, and the Republican contenders always have long, like, straight hair, like they might be your mother and, like, bake you cookies and, like, you know.
They look
like housewives.
Right. Yes.
They're styled to look like housewives.
Yeah.
But so Carly Fiorina is really stepping out.
Wow.
Because she's got short hair. Bold
moves.
Yeah, she's making bold hair statements.
Yeah.
So keep your eyes on her, guys.
Right.
She'll be their token woman.
Joni Ernst has short hair.
I know.
But she has sort of like crazy,
she has like weird Midwestern
weird
bull dyke
hair. She does.
Wig hair.
Yeah. Well, she's a motorcyclist.
Yeah. But that's like, there's like all of, there's like a lot of Midwestern women who just like mysteriously have the same haircut
as
bull
dykes. Yeah, they have that lesbian haircut.
They have a lesbian
haircut.
They don't
realize that that's what they're doing.
Right. Because they're in the Midwest and they're just like not interacting regularly with lesbians.
They know not what they do.
They know not what they do. She's got that haircut.
Yeah.
Another thing that was interesting about this year's CPAC was the degree to which Republicans were desperate to embrace selfies.
Mm.
I think...
Well, that's what the kids are doing.
Yeah, because they're trying to get the kids involved. But it resulted in a number of selfies that were just, like, so horribly awkward. That, like, Newt Gingrich was in a selfie. Like, don't have Newt Gingrich in your selfie.
No.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
I don't want to see a selfie with Rick Santorum or Newt Gingrich.
Ew, that's
horrifying in ways that I don't even want to describe.
Yeah.
But the Republicans have made fun of Obama for, like,
a
selfie
stick. Right, for that BuzzFeed
video. Video. So, like, they have historically been kind of antagonistic towards selfies. But they were really embracing them in an attempt to, I guess, make this exciting for millennials.
I finally found something that I agree with the Republicans on.
Selfie sticks are dumb.
The selfie sticks are dumb.
And yet they go back on their word.
I think selfies in general little are dumb. They're a little dumb.
Yeah.
They often upset me.
Yeah. No, it's... This is how Brent and I know we're getting old, by the way.
I know.
Like,
you know,
this is, like, the moment, this is the thing that I feel like
I know
I just
a lot
can't...
of people our age who, like, really love a good selfie, and I just can't.
I know,
can't,
that's true. I but
I
think they're trying to hold on to their youth.
Maybe that's what it is.
I'm not trying to hold on to my youth to the degree that I start taking selfies left, right, and center.
No.
I will pose in a picture that someone else is taking.
Yeah, sure.
I'm not afraid of a photo, but no. I'm certainly afraid to take that photo myself.
Exactly.
Because I'm not good at it either. It takes practice to take a good selfie.
So anyway, that was CPAC.
That's CPAC. I'm sure that as 2016 gets closer, we'll have more events to share of this nature. But we can only hope that one occurs at least.
What we need is a debate with all of these people, which I know will be coming probably as early as the summer.
Yeah.
But like that is when things are going to get
dreams.
Good. Right. That's... All of these people, because at these events, these people are on the same stage with each other. Like, I need to see, like, all 20 of them, like, standing up there next to each other.
Yeah.
Because that's when it's really going to get good.
Yeah. And that's and to see them argue about non-facts. I love when they have arguments about non-facts.
Well, and this is the, I mean, when, you know, they can all sort of, like, go on separately and try and out-conservative each other. But when they sort of, like, do it in a combative sort of way, like, when they sort of get in an argument to the point where, like, they're fighting about whether they want people to die because they don't have health insurance, like, that's what happens at a debate.
That's when the truth comes
and
out.
And if you're unaware, that actually happened.
Right.
That's not a thing that I just made
up.
I didn't make that up. That happened in 2012. That was, you know, there was an argument about, you know...
About Obamacare.
Obamacare, and people just...
resulted in... Several members of the conservative GOP primary pool basically stating that they would rather have people die than have healthcare.
Right.
That's
a thing.
That's a real thing.
Yeah, so that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, that's what's next. This is sort of like a stepping stone to what's great
about debate. Pre-gaming
they're
for
pre-gaming
that.
They're pre-gaming for debates.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Netanyahu is here. He's
here.
Going to give his speech. Now,
tomorrow.
We've been prepping.
Today, as you listen.
It's today as you listen to it. It's tomorrow for us, the people that are recording this. We've been prepping you for this speech for a long time. It's not going to be an interesting speech, by the way. Like,
no.
Don't, like, watch it.
Well, we know what
something.
The content is going to be.
We know what the content is going to be because he was speaking to APEC, like, today, I guess.
Today,
this morning. Mm-hmm. And he basically delivered the speech that he's planning to deliver. And then also Samantha Power had to speak, and they were like, please don't boo her. Everyone be respectful. Like, they were a little worried that the audience was going to get rowdy.
Yeah.
He is sort of trying to play down his beef with the Obama administration, as you would if you were a guy who came against their wishes and delivered a politicized speech right before your own election.
Yeah.
He referred to the disagreement that we're having as a, quote, family fight. He's like,
yes.
I don't want to be in his family. But, and then, you know, he sort of went on a whole tear about how he doesn't want to make Israel,
Israel
into a partisan issue, which is hilarious because this is what he's so expertly succeeding in doing. And this is something, I have been waiting for this to become a partisan issue for a long time.
Yeah. Well,
because
and he
it
knew
should
that
have been a partisan
And he knew
issue.
That that's what he was doing,
oh,
too.
Oh, of like, course. No, he's doing it knowingly.
To come over here and say that you don't want it to be a partisan issue when you came unknowingly
on a
of the administration
basis,
because the Republicans invited you. I mean, that's what, obviously that was your intent. It's totally disingenuous and just, it's not a good look, BB.
Not a good look, BB. Well, his look is often not great. I mean, this is the kind of nonsense that he is sort of famous for. I mean, he is not a great advocate for Israel, I think, for a lot of reasons. But one in particular is that he pulls shenanigans like this and, like, does them in the sort of, like, name of looking strong.
Right.
And he ends up alienating people that, it's almost impossible to alienate Americans from Israel.
Yeah.
It's people have been blindly agreeing to think whatever Israel wants them to think for so long.
And that's the thing
it's almost impossible.
And that's the thing that I think is good about where we're at because I am
at least we're having the discussion.
We're having the discussion and I'm not even, you know, I'm not here to say that I'm sort of like,
invested one way or another.
Invested one way or the other. But I think that to blindly defend them, I think is... That you wouldn't do that with any country.
No.
It doesn't make sense to do it with them either. So I just think that like the fact that people are sort of like having the balls to sort of like now have this like a discussion about it is like we couldn't even discuss it previously.
No,
so,
and
like,
this is sort of like such. I mean, this is why I think this is sort of a foolish move for him because this really was a topic that Americans couldn't even discuss.
And now it is.
And now it's a discussion.
Right.
And it's a discussion because he is pulling political crap like this.
Yeah, he has made this bed for
himself.
And
he has made this bed for himself. So, in any case, he's giving the speech tomorrow. He's planning to basically talk about how we shouldn't strike a deal with Iran for a number of reasons. Obviously, the Obama administration is sort of dedicated to the idea of trying to solve their issues with Iran diplomatically if they can. So, like, they are kind of like, well, sorry, Bibi.
Yeah.
Good. But him and Obama don't get along, so that's sort of interesting and exciting. Yeah. They've never liked each other.
Yeah.
I feel like he might... I feel like I have a sense that Netanyahu is kind of like a condescending asshole to Obama, and Obama's kind of like, listen, fucker. I'm the one that leads America.
Right.
Like, you can take your millions of dollars of aid and go fuck yourself.
Right, exactly.
So, in any case, I have a theory about their relationship that is not flattering to Bibi Netanyahu.
Yeah. You're probably right.
And I'm right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In any case, moving on to the DHS drama.
This was the best story of last week.
I know.
By
we had to bring you CPAC first.
Right, because, it was...
Because that's CPAC's the funniest story of last
week. Right, exactly. But this is, like, the most delicious story.
It's a gift that keeps on giving.
And also, so, just a little background here. What happened last week, and we have been prepping you for this for a while now, but what happened was, you know, the Senate finally, and I think we talked about this last week, decided that they were going to vote on a clean bill to fund the DHS for a certain amount of time without, you know, any sort of riders stripping the president of his, you know, authority to do what he did with, you know, his amnesty plan, basically.
Right.
So the Republicans got all up in arms about this, and there was a lot of infighting between the House and the Senate on
this. Hilarious. Infighting.
And you know what? Part of the reason why I love the story is because it was juicy, but also I felt very vindicated by this story because I was one of the big proponents before the 2014 November elections that we should just let the fuckers have it.
Yeah.
And
that's true. You did say that a lot.
And this is why. Right. Because they can't pull it together. They can't do it.
No, it's so inexpert what's going on here. These are seasoned political operators
who are out of practice at
governing because they've been blocking only for so long that now that they're on offense, it's like they don't even... They can't
fund a department of government...
That they made up
to fight terrorists, which is like the only thing that they care about.
I know.
Like, this is it, guys. Like, if you cannot... If you are a Republican and you cannot fund the DHS, then you have lost. That's it.
Like, there's no shred of dignity left for a Republican who can't fund the DHS.
And John Boehner was once again totally embarrassed because what he decided to do was they had supposedly struck this deal where he had the amount of votes where he was going to bring to the floor a bill to fund the DHS for 3 weeks. And he couldn't even get the 3-week bill passed when he thought that he had the votes, and then had to make a deal with the Democrats to get enough votes to fund it for a week. So once again, he had to get bailed out by Nancy Pelosi.
And his promise to them that he may or may not deliver on, no one is talking about whether he's planning to deliver on it or not, but his promise was to bring a clean bill to a vote.
Right.
He had to promise them a clean vote in order to get a 1-week extension.
Yeah.
But then it was only being blocked by his own party.
And so no one knows what's going to happen this week.
No.
It's already Monday. There was hardly any discussion of it today, basically. They've got their love fest with Bibi Netanyahu tomorrow, so I'm sure they won't get anything done there.
No.
I mean, we're going to be having the same conversation. And these are the people, by the way.
Once a week.
And these are the people, mind you, that said in their pitch to everyone that once they got control of everything, that they weren't going to go from crisis to crisis and, you know, cliff to cliff. And that is exactly what we are, because they are running both chambers of the legislative branch right now, and they cannot fund for even 3 weeks the DHS.
It's an agency. It's their agency.
I just never felt more proud of my own thinking than I did last week during this. But anyway, I mean, it really just was like, you know, and all of the Friday, I kept sending you the headlines on Friday because it was all like, Boehner fails again, you know, like not just from like, you know, like that was like the Politico one. Like, this was not like some like crazy, you know, this was not Daily Coast that I was stealing these headlines from. Like, these were like, you know, mainstream political sources.
He had mainstream failed again.
He did.
He mainstream failed.
Yeah.
He didn't left-wing fail or, you know, fringe left fail.
Right. Not only that, the far right places that I like to check just to see what the crazy shenanigans they're up to was talking about how Mitch McConnell had caved. So it's like, yeah, everybody
nobody won.
If you were, you know, a person on the far right, then you were pissed at Mitch McConnell. If you were, a person on the far right, you were also mad at John Boehner for, like, offering up this 3-week thing.
For capitulating to the Democrats.
And if you were in the mainstream, then...
They both looked like fools.
They were both idiots.
Yeah.
I mean, it was perfection.
They really played this perfectly.
They did. They did, yeah.
Showed their true colors perfectly. So,
yeah.
In any case... Nancy Pelosi is still essentially...
She's the Speaker of the House.
She's the Speaker of the House.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She is she's the emergency Speaker of the House.
Right. She can...
She handles all the crises.
Right. Exactly.
John Boehner is there to make a lot of noise and have a tan or whatever he does.
And
then she's there when shit hits the fan. They're all... Yeah. It's like they all go running to her to fix everything.
Right. Well, and the thing that I think... And we have said this on the podcast before, too. But, you know, say what you want about Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi has people in her caucus... That are in control. But she also has people who are just as far to the left in her caucus as there are to the far right in Boehner's caucus. And she still gets those fuckers to vote when she wants them to. I don't know what the hell she's doing.
No.
But I mean, that is a woman who can deliver a vote.
Yeah. And this is so funny because he is promising these votes. It's not... Nancy Pelosi, maybe when she was Speaker, didn't always get the votes that she wanted while she was trying to round up the votes.
Yeah.
But if she promised you a vote...
Oh.
She delivered it.
Yeah.
Boehner is promising these votes. He's promising to deliver these votes, and he can't do it because he has no control over what's going on at all.
No, he can't.
Well, and apparently, he can't get out of that position because he's like the fall guy for the entire party.
Right, exactly. Well, and apparently he can't count either. Because
not a counter. Not a mathematician.
The 3-week bill they brought wasn't even close. That was like it was like 250 to 200 or something. I mean, they were like way off on that. I mean, they were like, and the only reason, when you're the Speaker of the House, you don't bring up something to a vote when you don't think that it's going to pass.
No.
So, like, when he brought that up, I'm sure he really walked into the legislative chamber thinking that he had, like, scored some sort of 3-week,
victory
DHS victory for himself, and then, like, had to leave with his tail between his legs.
And this was already, by the way, not a victory because it was already stripping the one thing that he wanted, that his caucus wanted out of the bill.
Right.
Like, there was just, like, they've just been... It's like a game of chicken, and the Democrats always are able to,
do something. There's a chicken reference here somewhere, but I don't know what it is.
I was thinking of kick the can. I got confused between chicken and kicking the can.
Well, they're kicking the... They're doing both.
They're kicking the can. They're jumping chicken out of the car in just the right time or whatever you do with chicken.
Who knows? Yeah.
I can't know. It's Monday, guys.
Yeah.
We're recording this after work.
That's right.
I already worked a whole day. I can't always know what my chicken references are going to be about.
Yeah, that's right.
In any case, in Senate news,
yes,
we have a big retirement announcement.
Yes,
as of today.
Today, that's right. Barbara Mikulski.
Right, not Lisa Murkowski.
When I read the rundown, I couldn't stop saying Barbara Mikulski, which is wrong.
No,
Mikulski. Murkowski. Anyway,
it's hard.
She's old.
She's old.
She's 78.
Reals old.
She's super old.
The one
she's
person
retiring.
She's not older than Diane, our very own Diane Feinstein, our senior senator from California. Our junior senator's retiring.
Right.
Senior senator, she's not going to fucking give up.
She's like the senior senator, like, in life, basically.
Yeah.
Though. I mean, she's the oldest woman.
She's the oldest woman. Although, they have had many older men.
That's
the
right.
Men really hang on in the Senate.
They do. They're hangers on, yeah.
And a lot of them are, like, when you go and see them in person, are, like, basically falling down.
Yeah.
Like, they're, like, unable to stand.
Yeah.
Like, Harry Reid is not a man who can stand without someone holding him up.
Right. Well, this is a man who broke his face falling at the gym.
Exactly.
I mean,
who's in the Senate.
He's leading our party in the Senate.
Exactly.
Guys.
But so, in any case, the retirement announcement immediately prompted everyone to start speculating about who is going to run for her seat. Obviously, we don't want to lose her seat. She's in a blue state, but they have a Republican governor right now.
Yeah.
Because she's from Maryland. And so the list of potential candidates is, like, alarmingly long.
Yeah. Well, because everybody who is in the House of Representatives from Maryland is going to want to crack at it.
Right.
Of course, there is Martin O'Malley, who thinks he's running for president right now. As we said before
it's
the
not
podcast.
The right, this is it.
Do it.
Do this.
You could be the senator for the next 30 years. You could be the next senator for the next 10 years and then maybe decide to run for president if you want. But, like, now it's not it.
No, it's not it.
It's not happening for you. So, take this. It could be yours.
Exactly.
And then...
You're the most high-profile name that's talking about running.
Right. I think that he would have an interesting primary against Chris Van Hollen, who I think is probably a little to his left, so I feel like that could play out sort of interestingly. I mean, he sort of is like your, you know, your mainline kind of, you know, Clintonian Democrat, which is why he's not going to be
running against
now
Hillary Clinton.
Anyway, because he has nothing to show for himself, you know, against her. I mean, there's
nothing. Well, and also, he's not in office right now. So, like, he could run for Senate and be like, I'm the senator, and then he can run for president, and that's great for him.
Right.
But this is not the year that a Clinton-style mainline Democrat becomes the candidate unless they are Clinton.
right.
Because apparently everyone's too afraid to run anyway.
Right.
But so, because of that, like, why not take an easier stab at the Senate?
Yes.
It's so much easier.
Do something. Get a win under your belt.
Get a win under your belt. Show him. Yeah. But yeah, they're talking about him running. He's sort of the highest profile name, but they're also talking about the former lieutenant governor, Anthony Brown. He lost the gubernatorial race in the last round to a Republican, but he's pretty, like, sort of high profile in Maryland.
Right. There were supposedly a lot of, you know, when we were talking about that race, because that was obviously a bad loss for the, you know, for the Democrats in terms of governorships. He apparently, and I don't know the details, but ran a pretty crappy campaign, which is supposedly why he ended up losing.
Not surprised.
It'd be interesting to see
if he can do better.
If he can do better. I mean, maybe he learned, you know, learned his lessons. But the other thing is this is happening in 2016. So you've got to believe, you know, that's a pretty solid blue state.
Yeah. You've got to believe that you're turning out a blue.
Your chances are better in a presidential election because there are going to be more people actually voting, which is where in a, you know, a state where you have more Democrats, you would assume that the Democrat is going to win. So whoever actually ends up being the candidate here, you would have to believe is going to actually
there's,
win.
The Republicans are pretending to be excited about this, but I feel like this is really sort of a clear Democratic situation. Chris Van Hollen is interesting because he was the chair of the DCCC.
Right.
So he can, he has like a fundraising in that the rest of them don't.
Yeah.
Because he was sort of like the head of their fundraising apparatus.
Yeah.
In the House.
Yeah.
So
I remember getting a lot of emails
from
Chris Van Hollen.
A lot of fucking emails.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
We've been thinking about things to talk about on the podcast, and we just thought of one.
We just thought of one collectively.
Oh my God. Everyone.
Julia Brownlee
is dead to me.
Dead
right now.
To all of us.
But I can't pretend that she's dead because she still emails me 7 times a day. This is a woman who was emailing 30 times a day.
We started a Twitter campaign against her because we were so overwhelmed by her email situation.
And I hadn't received one from her for a long time, and I was feeling pretty good about that.
Yeah.
And then they're starting to roll in now.
Already. She just got reelected.
She just got reelected. And that, I think, you know, highlights actually one of the things that is a huge, you know, I mean, it's one of the huge problems that we have in our politics is the money, obviously, because every single one of these emails is a fundraising email, and it's specifically when you're in the House and you're in a close House race, which hers was, there was a recount.
We know that because of the emails.
You really have to, also, she's not a representative, by the way, so the fact that we're getting these emails from her is sort of head-scratching anyway, but because we can't do anything for her except give her money, which is definitely not going to happen.
No.
But, you know, she's really sort of like has to fundraise from the second that she's, again, another person that I'm going to feel bad for, I guess, but also I fucking hate her.
No,
so
I don't feel bad for her at all.
As I said to you earlier this week,
Brendan and I were talking about how we don't care
like,
if a Republican takes that seat, because at least that's pressure off of us, because we don't have to deal with these fucking emails.
Right, exactly.
One more Republican in the House, who cares?
Who gives a rip?
It's not important.
Right.
You know what's important is my peace of mind and not getting 1,000,000,000 emails a day from Julia fucking Brownlee.
So if you're Julia Brownlee and listening right now,
stop emailing
which
us.
You're not, but just please, by all
stop
means,
it.
My email address is brentthornburg@gmail.com, and I don't want another fucking email from you, or I said to you earlier this day, we need to find somebody to primary her whose only platform is to not have
send
that
fundraising emails.
Send fundraising emails.
Yeah.
Which you would obviously never get, because that is a person who would lose. But anyway, moving on.
Moving on.
To the next person.
Fury.
I was.
But anyway, Chris Van Hollen reminded us of that, because the DCCC is our nemesis at this point because of these fucking emails.
Yeah, the emails. It's too many emails.
There's a couple of other people in the House in Maryland who would be good contenders, and specifically there's a couple that could maybe bring out the African-American community, or, you know, would would drive a lot of the African-American vote, but they're not, neither are great fundraisers, not like Chris Van Hollen.
Right.
So that is sort of, they would maybe be interesting candidates, but they might not be able to get the money that they need to launch a full state race.
Yeah.
And then there's a couple of sort of like the Baltimore mayor and like a couple other like randos that are also in the mix.
Well, and that's and she's a woman.
And she's a woman.
Yeah, so that would
she's a very long name.
Yeah,
Rawlings Blake. Oh, boy. She's a hyphen name.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that long. It's just Stephanie Rollins Blake, but it's it's hyphened.
Hyphenated. Yeah.
No, there's not been a Republican in the seat since the 80s. Possibly because there's been the same Democrat in the seat since the 80s.
That's right.
But it's there's not much of a race.
Well, she's been around forever because she was in the House for 10 years before she was in the Senate.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, she's in her late 70s.
This would have been her sixth term, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
a long time.
It's a long time.
Yeah. But this is the thing. You know, when you get when you win a seat in a state like that, I mean, this is a, you know, we talked a lot about it with Elizabeth Warren in Massachusetts. Yeah. Like, if she can just win that seat, then, she can
be a professional senator for life.
That's it. You know, and this is the same thing with in a place like Maryland. If you win that seat, then you did it.
Yeah.
That's it.
You made it. Well, that's the thing with the Senate generally, because it's very difficult to get the apparatus or the sort of campaign apparatus together to run a full state campaign if you are a local politician in that state. So once someone sort of has the seat, it's hard to primary an incumbent. It's hard to run a general against an incumbent.
Yeah.
They have access to a lot of the sort of Washington-based fundraising strategies that you don't really necessarily, that if you're running against an incumbent, you don't have access to. Yeah. So like once you're in the Senate, you can just sort of hang out there.
Yeah.
That's why we have so many old people in the Senate who have old ideas.
That's right.
That's why the Senate is filled with old ideas and people.
Yep.
Meanwhile...
Speaking of old ideas and people.
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton.
A person who is running for president.
That's right.
That's definitively true. What we don't know is when she will be definitively running for president.
Guess who else doesn't know?
Hillary Clinton.
That's right. No earthly idea. No.
When every week there's an article about how they're going to move up her start date or...
Right, or push move it back.
Move it or, back or move because, it around.
Because
or,
remember when...
Move it in a circle.
Move it in a circle. Because the word on the street was... This started a long time ago. This is not new news. Because we talked a lot in the fall. There was a lot of speculation that if the Democrats flamed out in the November election, which is exactly what happened, that Hillary Clinton was going to immediately declare her candidacy because she was going to swoop in and save the party from themselves, basically. Well, that didn't happen.
No.
So then the next news was that she was going to, announce in the spring, which is when people sort of tend to announce. And then a couple weeks ago, we brought you the story where she was going to move it to July because nobody's running
a fundraising deadline.
Because a fundraising deadline and nobody's running anyway. So why run a campaign against yourself, basically? And now comes the news that she's going to announce in April.
Yeah.
Nobody has a damn clue when she's going to announce. It doesn't matter.
She doesn't have a damn clue.
She doesn't know.
People that work with her don't have a clue.
Nobody knows.
Nobody knows. And the people that know the least are the people who should know the most.
Right.
Her people.
Her people. Don't know.
So we're already seeing the beginnings of a classic Clinton campaign.
Yes.
Classic Hillary campaign move to not even know what you know about the beginning of your campaign.
That's right. Yeah.
So.
Yikes.
Looking forward to a
big
general against
yikes.
This campaign.
Oh, boy. I mean, I just have to be licking their chops on this one, basically.
I mean, if they didn't have such a clown car situation happening on the right,
Well, I know.
I mean, I honestly don't know what's going to happen in 2016. I'm feeling very confused.
It's like, so great.
It's like everyone is doing the wrong thing.
Yeah,
there's not a single candidate out there who's just getting it right.
Nope.
Mm-mm. Except Bernie Sanders, a man who is always getting it right.
Right.
But we don't even know if he can run in the primary.
Nope.
So we don't know anything.
No.
We know nothing about anything. In any case, in semifinal news, Bill O'Reilly.
Guys.
Still alive, more of a liar than we realized.
Okay. This is, again, similar to how we were sort of upset with the uproar about Brian Williams, a man who doesn't actually do any news, in the sense that he's not doing anything more than reading the news. No one should be shocked that Bill O'Reilly is lying about all the things.
Every
because
day.
That is what Bill O'Reilly does on his show.
That's true.
Bill O'Reilly is paid by the Fox News Corporation to be a liar.
That's true.
Okay? And when people attack him, and this is an important point, I think, because when people attack him for being a liar, that plays right into his hand.
That's true.
And it plays right into the Fox News hand, because this is a network.
Then they can be like, we're under attack by the left.
That's it. This is a network that exists because...
In opposition,
and it's sort of as the other guy in the mainstream media landscape, basically. Like, they are the, they're the outsiders. And so when Mother Jones and CNN... and, you know, whoever else attacks them for being liars, that is just, like, that is... That's their lifeblood. That's it. Yeah, exactly. But Bill O'Reilly is a fucking liar.
The man's not telling the truth about a lot.
And we talked about this last week, where, you know, there was a lot of, you know, uproar about whether... And this all originated with Mother Jones.
Whether he was at the Falklands War.
Right, which he wasn't, because there weren't Americans there. We know that.
We know definitively that he was not there.
But what we do know is that he did actually cover some protests at the end of the Falklands War. Right, exactly.
He called them riots.
Now, some clever person decided that the best way to disprove this was to pull up his actual reporting from the time back in, right. When was this?
He was there for CBS.
He was there for CBS. So, exactly. That's a thing. You can find the report.
Yeah.
Guess what? He was lying about it.
He was at a protest. He did note that the police were seemed to be pelted with coins.
Being pelted with coins is different than being gunned down with, like, actual bullets and, like, police and riot gear.
Correct.
The different things.
Coin throwing does not make a riot.
No, it doesn't.
But so, in any case, a bunch of media outlets have been doing some deeper digging.
Yeah.
Not digger
digger
deepening.
Digger deepening.
Well, and I said it, and I was like, that sounds right. And I was like, no, it doesn't.
It didn't at all, actually.
Some deeper digging.
Right.
To a couple of other things that he's mentioned in the past, in books that he's written, in anecdotes he loves to tell.
Yes.
All of which are, as it turns out, fabrications.
All of them.
There's one particularly long-winded story that is only hilarious because the person in question has the craziest last name in history.
Yeah.
There's one of, I guess this is a friend of Lee Harvey Oswald's.
Right.
And
who lived in Florida. And right. I guess what apparently had happened was that Bill O'Reilly claimed that he committed suicide.
Right.
Because he was being questioned.
And his name
at
is
the time.
Morin Schmidt.
Sure. Something like that. Yeah.
Schilt.
But he was
Morin Schilt.
Right. But he was being questioned because he, you know, had this, you know,
connection to Lee Harvey Oswald.
So, and he committed suicide at his home in Florida. Bill O'Reilly, in his book, he wrote a book about, it was called Killing Kennedy. Talked about how he was there at the time in Florida in like 1977 or whatever, and heard the gunshot from outside the house.
Right.
He not only did not hear that gunshot, he was not in the state at the time.
He was in Texas. Different state.
He was in Texas. So this became, people from the news station at the time sort of said, I don't think that was actually true because we think he was in Texas at the time. So what happened was CNN got audio tapes where they had recorded him talking to someone saying about this situation, saying, all right, I'm coming. I'm going to be in Florida tomorrow. Like, after it had happened. So, again, his own words.
Wrong.
Proving that he was a liar.
Fox News had to apologize because he claimed that he had seen Irish terrorists bomb citizens in Belfast.
Right. That didn't happen.
That didn't happen.
Right. So, Fox News finally sort of, like,
and then another story about him seeing nuns murdered in El Salvador that they also had to apologize about.
He himself walked back.
Right. He himself walked that one back. Didn't happen.
Yeah.
But again,
this is not a thing that is going to affect him in any way. He's not going to be fired. And as I said last week, I don't care.
Right.
I mean,
the man lies for a living.
That's what he does.
Since he's a professional at that.
Yeah. So, I mean, God bless it. Let him carry on.
Right.
I mean, who cares?
Seeing all the fake wars that he wants.
No.
Can participate in any fake war that he sets his mind to.
Yeah.
Literally.
I mean, what happens if he retires? You just get an extra hour of Sean Hannity, who's doing the same fucking thing.
That's
I mean, you know, it's like what these
right.
people.
You don't get. It's not like matter. You replace.
You don't
in
fire
equality.
Him and then all of a sudden like hire someone at Fox News who's going to give you the actual news.
No,
like that's not what
that's
they're
not
gonna
the solution.
Do.
No.
So let him just carry on.
Lying up a storm.
That's it. That's the answer.
I would like him. I don't mind if he does that. I would like him to stop calling out other people for lying while he's doing the same thing. That's just irritating to me. The reason that we
are caring about this right now is because...
It's because he was so hard on Brian Williams
right, exactly.
for doing the same thing.
Yeah.
If he had not said that about Brian Williams, we would, A, be assuming that he's lying about everything, but also not be even talking about it.
Right. No one would
just
care.
Move on with our lives.
Yeah, exactly. CNN would not be digging up old, you know, phone calls of his from 1977 about whether he was in Florida or Texas.
Although I think what a lot of people learned in this situation is that Bill O'Reilly was a reporter at one point who reported the news.
That might be the most shocking news of all.
That's been the biggest revelation of this entire thing.
I know. Yeah, exactly.
It's been scary.
Oh, man. It's been tough. Yeah.
Meanwhile, that's the news.
That's it.
We didn't have a lot of news this week.
That's all we did.
We'll probably be back with more news next week.
Yeah, we will.
When we have time to look at it.
Yeah. Well, I feel like every week until potentially the end of time, we'll have to be deciding whether we're funding the DHS or not.
That's true.
We're probably just going to get like week-long extensions until, right. You know. Just...
Once a week, we'll just vote. It'll be a horribly embarrassing experience for Boehner.
Yeah.
He will not understand that it's so embarrassing that he should stop.
It'll become old news. You know what news we'll have next week?
What?
A jobs report.
Oh, God.
Because February's over.
Oh, Lord.
I looked for it today. I couldn't find it.
Jobs report. Jobs numbers. Fake numbers with their jobs numbers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to go back to having Obamacare reports.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's sort of like, well, tax time.
Tax time.
Yeah, it's not that far. In a month, we'll be getting
some new Obamacare numbers.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so not until next month, but until next week.
Right.
Be good.
Yeah. Guys, our 150th anniversary is coming up, by the way.
Yes,
we're going to be having a spectacular blowout for it.
Right.
That is totally TBD at this point. But start telling all your friends right now.
Tell your friends to get ready.
It's in 6 weeks. Exactly. It's in a month and a half.
Yeah. And we're excited about it, despite not knowing what we're doing.
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of special things coming at you.
It's going to be truly exciting.
That we will figure out between now and then.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's going to actually fall like pretty close to our 3-year anniversary.
Yeah.
Because...
Well, that's
we've
math.
Skipped a couple of weeks, and it's math. But so it's going to be a real blowout.
Yeah.
It's going to be exciting. Mm-hmm. We've been doing this for 3 years. That's kind of weird. until next week, when we have more news about the 2016 field and jobs report numbers, I guess.
Yeah.
We'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.